Tally managed to smile back. Me too. Don't let Shay make you feel bad about us, Tally. Of course not. She shook her head, realizing how much she meant it. Whatever Shay thought, Zane had been the right person to share the cure with. He had kept her bubbly, pushing her to pass the Smokies tests, pressing her to dare the unproven pills. Tally had found more than a cure for pretty-headedness that day. She'd found someone to move forward with, past everything that had gone wrong last summer. It had been literally days when Paris had promised to stay her best friend forever. But the day he'd turned 16, Paris had left her behind in Uglyville. Then Tally had lost Shay's friendship, betraying her to special circumstances and stealing David from her. Now even David was gone, missing somewhere in the wild and half erased from her memories. He hadn't even bothered to bring her the pills. He'd left that job to Croy. Tally could guess what that meant. But Zane? Tally stared into his golden, perfect eyes. He was here with her right now, in the flesh, and she'd been stupid to let what was between them get tangled up in her messy past. I should have told you about Shay earlier, but the smart walls... It's okay, but you can trust me. Always. She pressed his hand in both of hers. I know. He reached up to touch her face. We really didn't know each other very well that day, did we? We took a chance, I guess. Weird how that happened. He laughed. I think that's the way it always happens. Usually without mysterious pills or special circumstances pounding on the door. But it's always taking a risk when you kiss someone new. Tally nodded and leaned forward. Their lips met, the kiss slow and intense in the chill of the rain. She could feel him trembling, and the muddy ground beneath them was cold, but their two hoods joined to block out the world, making a space that became warm from their mingling breath. Tally whispered, I'm so glad it was you with me that day. Me too. She pulled away, wiping at her face. A trickle of water had crawled inside Tally's hood and was running down her cheek like a cold, malevolent tear. He laughed and stood up, pulling her to her feet. Come on, we can't stay here forever. Let's go back to Poulter and get breakfast, and some dry clothes. I wasn't uncomfortable. He smiled but indicated his wrist and lowered his voice. If we sit in one place too long, someone might get curious about what the big deal is out here in Uglyville. Whatever it is, she whispered. But Zane was right. They should go home. They hadn't eaten anything all day except for a few calorie purgers and some coffee. Their winter coats were heated, but between the physical effort of hoverboarding and the shock of getting dumped into the freezing river, Tally was starting to feel exhaustion and cold down in her bones. Hunger, the cold, and the kiss were all dizzy-making. Zane snapped his fingers and his board rose into the air. Wait a second, she said softly. There's one more thing I should tell you about the night of the breakthrough. Okay. After I took you home. The thought of Dr. Cable's feral face made her shiver, but Tally took a calming breath. She'd been stupid not to drag Zane outside sooner, getting him away from Poulter Mansion's smart walls to tell him about her encounter with the doctor. She didn't want any secrets between them. What's wrong, Tally? She was waiting for me, she said. Dr. Cable. The name made Zane's face go blank for a moment. Then he nodded. I remember her. You do? She's kind of hard to forget, Zane said. He paused, staring out into the clearing. Tally wondered if he was going to say more. Finally, she said, She made me a weird sort of offer. She wanted to know if I... Shh, he hissed. What? She began. But Zane silenced her with a gloved hand. He turned and crouched in the mud, pulling her down beside him. Through the trees, a group of figures were marching into the clearing. They moved slowly, huddled in almost identical winter gear, their left wrists wrapped in black scarves. But Tally recognized one of them instantly, copper eyes bright and flash tattoos spinning in the cold. It was Shay.
Ritual. Tally counted 10 of them, slogging with quiet determination across the muddy ground. They reached the middle of the clearing and arranged themselves in a wide circle around one of the solemn flags. Shay moved to stand in the center, slowly turning, peering at the others from under her hood. The others settled into place about an arm's length apart, facing Shay and waiting silently. After a long moment motionless, she dropped her winter coat to the ground, pulling off her gloves and spreading her arms. She wore only trousers, a sleeveless white t-shirt, and the fake metal cuff on her left wrist. Tipping her head back, she let the rain pound against her face. Tally shivered and gathered her own coat tighter around her. Was Shay trying to freeze herself to death? The other figures did nothing for a moment. Then, slowly, and with awkward glances at one another, they followed her example, pulling off coats and gloves and sweaters. As their hoods came down, Tally recognized two more Crims. Ho was there, one of Shay's old friends who had run away to the smoke only to come back on his own. Tally also recognized Tox, who joined the clique a few weeks before she had. But the seven other pretties weren't Crims at all. They placed their coats on the ground gingerly, hugging themselves against the bitter cold. When Ho and Tox spread their arms, the others followed reluctantly. Rain ran down their faces and plastered the white shirts to their skin. "What are they doing?" Zane whispered. Tally only shook her head. She noticed that Shay had gotten new serge, some sort of raised tattoo hash marks on her arm. They extended from elbow to wrist, and Ho and Tok seemed to have copied the design. Shay began to speak, facing upward, addressing the flag overhead like a crazy person talking to nobody in particular. Her voice didn't carry across the clearing, except for a word here and there. Tally couldn't make sense of it. The cadence sounded like a chant, almost like the prayers that Rusties and pre-Rusties had once offered up to their invisible superheroes in the sky. After a few minutes, Shay fell silent, and again the group stood without saying a word, all shivering in the cold except the apparently insane Shay. Tally realized that the non-Crims all had flash tattoos on their faces, fresh-looking serge that glistened in the rain. She guessed that since the stadium disaster, swirly face tattoos must be the rage. But it was an awfully big coincidence that all seven of the unknown pretties had them. "Those pings from wannabes," she whispered. "Shay's been recruiting." "But why?" Zane hissed. "We all agreed that newbies were the last thing we need right now." "Maybe she needs them."
"For what?"
A shiver went through Tally.
"For this."
Zane swore.
"We'll just veto them."
Tally shook her head.
"I don't think she cares about vetoes. I'm not sure if she's still a..."
Shay's voice cut through the rain again. She reached into her back pocket and produced an object that glittered coldly in the gray light. It unfolded into a long knife. Tally's eyes widened, but none of the pretties in the circle looked surprised. Their expressions revealed a mix of queasy fear and excitement. Holding the knife aloft, Shay spoke more words in the same slow, deliberate cadence, and Tally heard one repeated enough to make it out. It sounded like cutters.
"Let's get out of here,"
she said so softly that Zane must not have heard. She wanted to climb on her hoverboard and flee, but Tally found she couldn't move, or look away, or close her eyes. Shay took the knife with her left hand and placed its edge against her right forearm, the wet metal gleaming. She raised both arms, turning slowly, fixing each of the others with her burning gaze. Then she looked up into the rain. The movement was so slight that Tally hardly saw it from their hiding place, but she knew what had happened from the reactions of the others. Their bodies shuddered, eyes widening with horrified fascination. Like Tally, they couldn't look away. Then she saw the blood begin to trickle from the wound. It ran thinly in the rain, spreading down Shay's upraised arm and onto her shoulder, reaching her shirt, spreading a color that was more pink than red. She turned around once to give them all a good look, her slow, deliberate movements as disturbing as the blood running down her arm. The others were shivering visibly now, shooting furtive glances at one another. Shay finally lowered her arm, swaying a little on her feet, and held out the knife. Ho stepped forward to take it from her, and she took his place in the circle. "What's this?" Zane whispered. Tali shook her head and closed her eyes. The rain became suddenly deafening around her, but she heard her own words through the torrent. "This is Shay's new cure." The others followed one by one. They kept on expecting them to run, thinking that if only one of them would make a break for it, the rest would scatter into the forest like scared rabbits. But something, the bleak setting, the spirit-sapping rain, or maybe the crazed expression on Shay's face, bound them to their spots. They all watched, and then, one by one, they cut themselves. And as each did so, their faces transformed to become more like Shay's, ecstatic and insane. With every cut, Tali felt something hollowing out inside her. She couldn't forget that there was more to this ritual than madness. She remembered the night of the costume party. Her fear and panic had made her bubbly enough to pursue Croy, but had left her still pretty-minded. It wasn't until after Paris's knee had struck her as he hoverboarded, opening up her eyebrow, that Tali's head had really become clear. Shay had admired that scar. She'd been the one to suggest getting a tattoo to commemorate it. Apparently, she'd also understood how the injury had changed Tali, leading her to Zane, to the top of the transmission tower, and finally to the cure. And now Shay was sharing her knowledge. "This is our fault," Tali whispered.
"What?"
Tali opened her gloved hands toward the tableau before them. She and Zane had given Shay what she needed to spread this cure. Citywide fame, hundreds of pretties all dying to become crims, bleeding to become crims. Or whatever they were becoming. "Cutters," Shay had said. "She's not one of us anymore." "Why are we just sitting here?" Zane hissed. His fists were clenched, his face reddening in the shadow of his hood. "Zane, calm down." Tali took his hand. "We should make her..." His voice trailed off with a choked-sounding cough, his eyes wide. "Zane?" she whispered. He was struggling for breath, hands clutching at empty air. "Zane!" Tali cried aloud. She grabbed his other hand, staring into his bulging eyes. He wasn't breathing. Tali glanced into the clearing, desperate for help from someone, anyone, even the cutters. A few of the distant figures had heard her cry, but they only stared wide-eyed at her, blood flowing and flash tattoos spinning, too zoned out to be of any help. She reached for her cuff, tearing off the black scarf to send a distress ping, but Zane's hand reached out to grab her. He shook his head painfully.
"No."
"Zane, you need help."
"I'm okay."
The words tore out from his throat. She paused a moment, imagining him dying here in her arms. But if she called the wardens, they might both wind up under the surgeon's knife, pretty-minded for good, leaving Shay's cure as the only one in town.
"All right," she said, "but I'm taking you to the hospital."
"No."
"Not inside, just as close as we can get. We'll wait there and see what happens."
Tali rolled Zane onto her hoverboard and snapped her fingers, watching as it rose into the air. She lay on top of him, feeling the board settle uneasily under their combined weight. The lifters held, and she pushed forward carefully. As the board began to move, she glanced back at the clearing. All 10 of them were staring at Tali and Zane now. Shay was walking toward them, her glare as cold as the rain. Suddenly, Tali was overwhelmed with fear, the same terror she felt at the sight of specials. She pushed off hard with her feet,
leaning forward and climbing into the trees, leaving the place behind. The ride down to the river was terrifying. Zane's limbs sprawled out in all directions, his shifting weight threatening to tip the board over with every turn. Tally wrapped her arms around him, fingernails scraping across the board's knobbly underside. She steered with her flailing legs, her turns as wide as a stumbling drunk's. The cold rain spat into her face, and Tally remembered the goggles in her coat pocket, but there was no way of getting at them without stopping. And there wasn't time to stop. They hurtled among the trees, the board picking up speed as they descended toward the river. Pine branches, heavy and glistening with captured raindrops, reared up out of the rain to slash her face. When they finally burst out of Cleopatra Park, Tally cut across a belt of muddy sports fields at top speed, angling toward the far end of the central island. At this distance, the hospital was invisible in the driving rain, but Tally spotted the running lights of a hover car headed in that direction. It was moving fast and high, probably an ambulance taking someone in. Squinting against the barrage of freezing rain, she managed to keep her eyes on it, following its course. As the hover car pulled out of sight, they reached the river, and the overweighted board began to lose lift over the open water. Tally realized too late what was happening. The buried metal grid that magnetic lifters used to push water against was lower here, in the ground under 10 meters of water. As they neared the middle of the river, the board descended closer and closer to the cold and choppy surface. Halfway across, the board struck water with a slap, Zane's hands bouncing off the river as if it was solid. But the hoverboard rebounded into the air, and as the far shore grew closer, the lifters gained purchase and carried them higher. "Tally," a croaking voice came from beneath her. "It's okay, Zane. I've got you." "Yeah, feels very under control." Tally dared a glance down at him. His eyes were open, his face no longer red. She realized that his chest rose and fell beneath her, his breathing normal. "Just relax, Zane. I'll stop when we're close to the hospital."
"Don't take me there."
"I'm just taking you closer, in case."
"In case what?" he said raggedly.
"In case you stop breathing again. Now shut up." He fell obediently silent, his eyes closing. As the river's rain-spattered surface shot by underneath them, the lights of the hospital rose up, its dark bulk reassuringly close. Tally spotted the flashing yellow lights of the emergency bay, but pulled off the river before they reached it, climbing the bank slowly. She brought the board to rest in the shelter of a rack of empty ambulances, the hover cars stacked 3 high in their giant metal frame, apparently awaiting some major disaster. When the board settled, Zane rolled off onto the wet ground with a groan. She kneeled next to him. "Talk to me."
"I'm fine," he said, "except my back."
"Your back? What?"
"I think it has to do with riding a hoverboard on it," he snorted, "and under you."
She took his face in her hands, staring into his pupils. He looked exhausted and bedraggled, but he smiled and winked at her tiredly.
"Zane."
She felt herself starting to cry again, tears running hot among the cold raindrops.
"What's happening to you?"
"Like I said, I think we need some breakfast."
Sobs racked her body.
"But..."
"I know."
He put his hands on her shoulders.
"We have to get out of here."
"But what about the new smoke?"
His hand shot up to cover her mouth, muffling her next words. She pulled away in surprise. Zane pushed himself up on one elbow, staring at her cuff, which was uncovered in the rain. She'd taken her glove off to make a call when his attack had started.
"Oh, I'm sorry."
He shook his head, pulling her closer and whispering,
"It's okay."
Tally closed her eyes, trying to remember what they had said on the mad trip here.
"We argued about taking you to the hospital," she whispered.
He nodded and stood shakily, saying aloud, "Well, since we're here..."
He turned and punched his fist against the metal of the ambulance rack. It rebounded with a dull ring. Zane! He doubled over with pain, then shook his head, waving his wounded hand in the air for a moment. He regarded the blood on the knuckles.
As I said, since we came all this way, I might as well get this looked at. But next time, ask me, okay?
She stared at him, finally understanding. For a moment, she'd thought Shay's insanity was contagious. But a wounded hand was a plausible reason for their wild ride here, and would square with most of what the cuff had heard. Tally could also tell the wardens that they hadn't eaten in a couple of days. Maybe a vitamin and blood sugar drip in Zane's arm would help his headache. He still looked like crap, muddy and soaking wet, but he walked without any stagger. In fact, Zane seemed pretty bubbly after cracking his hand. Maybe Shay wasn't as insane as she looked. At least she knew what worked.
Come on, he said.
Want a ride? Tally asked, pointing. The second hoverboard was coasting toward them across the grass, having followed the signal in Zane's crash bracelets.
I think I'll walk, he said, trudging toward the flashing lights of the emergency bay.
Tally saw then that his hands shook, and how pale he was, and she resolved that the next time he had an attack, she was calling the wardens. Even the cure wasn't worth dying for. Hospital. It turned out that Zane's punch had broken 3 bones in his hand, which were going to take half an hour to fix. Tally shared the waiting room with 2 brand new pretties, waiting for a friend with a broken leg. Something about running down wet stairs outside Lily and Russell Mansion. She ignored the details of the story, scarfing down cookies and coffee with lots of milk and sugar, luxuriating in the hospital's warmth and total absence of pounding rain. The rare sensation of calories entering her body softened the world a little, but Tally was glad for a few moments of pretty haze. Her memories of what Shay and company were up to in Cleopatra Park were all too clear.
So, what happened to you? One of the pretties finally asked.
The emphasis on the last word indicating her soaked and muddy clothes, exhausted expression, and generally shaming appearance. Tally shoved a chocolate chip cookie into her mouth and shrugged. Hoverboarding. The other pretty elbowed her friend, widening her eyes and angling one nervous thumb at Tally.
What? He said. Shh. What?
The second pretty sighed. Sorry, she said to Tally. My friend is brand new, and totally brain missing. She explained to him in a whisper.
That's Tally Youngblood.
The first one opened his mouth wide, then shut it. Tally just smiled and stuffed another cookie into her face.
Of course you'd run into Tally Youngblood in the emergency bay, they were thinking. What else?
They were probably wondering what piece of major architecture had crumbled under her this time. Though her celebrity kept the other 2 mercifully quiet, their furtive glances were unsettling. Those 2 pretties weren't the type to become cutters. Tally was fairly certain. But she couldn't escape the realization that her criminal notoriety was feeding Shay's little project, creating pretties hungry to explore a certain kind of bubbliness. Even full of coffee, milk, and cookies, Tally's stomach began to feel sour as she wondered if trips to the emergency bay were going to be the rage this winter.
Tally?
An orderly stood by the waiting room door, beckoning her in. Finally, Tally was ready to get out of this place. Take care, kids, she said to the pretties, and followed the orderly down the hall. When the door closed behind her, Tally realized she hadn't been taken to the outpatient center. The orderly had brought her to a small room dominated by a huge, cluttered desk. A wall screen showed a grassy field on a sunny day, the sort of visuals they showed in Little League school right before nap time.
Been out in the rain? The orderly said brightly, pulling off his powder blue paper robe.
He was wearing a suit underneath.
Semi-formal.
Her brain informed her. and Tally realized that he wasn't an orderly at all. He had the beaming smile favored by politicians, nursery teachers, and head shrinks. She sat in the chair across from him, her damp clothes squelching.
You totally guessed it. He smiled. Well, accidents happen. You were wise to bring your friend in, and lucky me, being here when you did.
The thing is, I've been trying to get in touch with you, Tally.
You have?
Indeed. He smiled again. There was a species of middle pretty who smiled at everything. Happy smile, disappointed smile, you're in trouble smile. His was welcoming and enthusiastic, trustworthy and calm, and it set Tally's teeth on edge. He was the sort of middle pretty Dr. Cable had promised Tally she would become, smug and self-assured, his handsome face marked with just the right lines of laughter, age, and wisdom.
You haven't been opening your mail the last couple of days, have you? He said.
She shook her head.
Too many bogus pings. From being on the feeds, you know. Totally famous-making.
The words earned Tally a proud smile.
I suppose it's all been very exciting for you and your friends.
She shrugged, going for false modesty.
It was bubbly at first, but now it's getting bogus. So, who are you again?
Dr. Remy Anders. I'm a trauma counselor here on the hospital staff.
Trauma? Is this about the stadium thing? Because I'm totally...
I'm sure you're fine, Tally. It's a friend of yours I've been wanting to ask you about.
Frankly, we're a little worried.
About who?
Shay.
Behind her pretty expression, a serious ping went through Tally. She tried to keep her voice steady.
Why Shay?
Slowly, as if controlled by a remote, Dr. Anders' concerned smile bent into a frown.
There was a disturbance the other night at your little bonfire party. An argument between you and Shay. Quite troubling.
Tally blinked, stalling as she recalled Shay screaming at her by the fire. Even under all those layers, the cuff must have heard how upset Shay had been, way beyond the usual soft-spoken tiff between new pretties. Tally tried to recall exactly what Shay had shouted, but the combination of champagne and horrible guilt wasn't very memory-improving. She shrugged.
Yeah, she was pretty drunk. Me too. It didn't sound very happy-making.
Dr. Remy, are you, like, spying on us? That's bogus.
The counselor shook his head and went back to the concerned smile. We have a particular interest in all of you who suffered that unfortunate accident. It can sometimes be difficult to recover from frightening and unexpected events. That's why I've been assigned as your post-stress counselor.
Tally pretended not to notice that he'd totally dodged the spying question. She already knew the answer, anyway. Special circumstances might not care if the Crims knocked down New Pretty Town, but the wardens were always on the job. Given that the city was designed to keep people pretty-minded, it made sense that they would assign a counselor to anyone who'd had any serious bubbly-making experience. Dr. Anders was here to make sure that the breakthrough hadn't given the Crims any new and exciting ideas. She summoned up a pretty smile.
In case we go crazy? Dr. Anders laughed. Oh, we don't think you'll go crazy. I'm just here to make sure there aren't any long-term effects. Friendships can be negatively impacted by stress, you know.
She decided to throw Remy a bone and let her eyes widen. So that's why she was being such a pain that night.
He brightened. Yes, it's all about stress, Tally. But remember, she probably didn't mean it.
Well, I didn't go all crazy on her.
Reassuring smile. Everyone reacts differently to trauma, Tally. Not everyone's as tough as you. Instead of getting angry, why don't we think of this as an opportunity to show Shay your support? You're old friends, aren't you?
Yeah, since we were uglies. Same birthday.
That's wonderful. Old friends are best at times like these. What was the fight about?
Tally shrugged.
I don't know. Nothing, really. Can you remember at all?
Tally wondered if this room was rigged to polygraph her, and if so, how big a lie she could get away with. She closed her eyes, concentrating on the calories moving through her half-starved body, letting a pretty haze settle over herself.
"Tally?" he prompted.
She decided to give Anders a little bit of the truth.
"It was just old stuff." He nodded, folding his hands in satisfaction.
Tally wondered if she'd said too much.
"From ugly days?" he asked.
She shook her head, not trusting her voice.
"Have you and Shay been getting along since that night?"
"Just fine."
He smiled happily,
but Tally caught him glancing away into the middle distance, probably at an eye screen that was invisible to her. Was he checking the city interface? It would know that she and Shay hadn't pinged each other since the party, and 3 whole days without any mail between them was pretty unusual. Or was Dr. Anders looking to see if her voice was wavering? He gave his invisible data, or whatever it was, a small nod.
"Has she seemed in better spirits to you since then?"
"She's okay, I guess. Just a little self-mutilation, crazy chanting, and maybe wanting to start her own very disturbing clique."
"I haven't seen her since this bogus rain started coming down, actually. But me and her are best friends forever."
The last words came out wrong, Tally's voice sounding rough. She coughed a little, which was marked by a deepening of Dr. Anders' concerned smile.
"I'm glad to hear that, Tally. And you're feeling all right as well, aren't you?"
"Bubbly," she said. "A little hungry, though."
"Yes, yes. You and Zane really must eat more. You're looking a bit thin. And I'm told his blood sugar was terribly low when he came in."
"I'll make sure he has some of those chocolate chip cookies in the waiting room. They're awesome."
"A wonderful idea. You're a good friend, Tally."
He stood, offering his hand.
"Well, I see that Zane's all patched up, so I won't keep you. Thanks for your time. And make sure you let me know if you or any of your friends ever need to talk."
"Oh, I will," she said, giving the doctor her prettiest smile. "This has really been great." Outside, the cold rain embraced Tally like an old and unavoidable friend. The discomfort, almost a relief, after Dr. Anders' radiant smiles. She told Zane about him on the way home. Although her cuff was bound up again, she spoke softly enough for the wind to tear her words away as they climbed into the gray sky. He sighed when she was done.
"Sounds like they're as worried about her as we are."
"Yeah, they must have heard our fight the other night. She was screaming at me in a very unpretty way."
"Perfect."
His teeth were bared against the cold. It didn't look like the painkillers they'd given him for his hand were helping Zane's headache much. His feet shuffled on the board, finding their balance clumsily. "I didn't say anything much, just that she was drunk and acting up." Tally allowed herself a thin smile of self-congratulation. This one time, at least, she hadn't betrayed Shay. She hoped.
"Of course you didn't, Tally. Shay might need help, but not from some middle pretty head shrink. What we have to do is get her out into the wild and give her the real cure. As soon as possible."
"Yeah, the pills are a lot better than cutting yourself. If they don't wind up giving you brain damage," she didn't add. Tally had decided not to tell Zane about her resolve to take him to the hospital the next time he had an attack. Hopefully it wouldn't come to that.
"So, how were your doctors?"
"The usual. They spent the first hour lecturing me about eating more. When they finally got around to knitting my bones up, I was only unconscious about 10 minutes. But other than being skinny, they didn't seem to notice anything weird about me."
"Good."
"Of course, that doesn't mean I'm fine. They didn't look at my head, after all, just my hand."
Tally took a deep breath. "Your headaches are getting worse, aren't they?"
"I think it was more hunger and cold than anything else."
She shook her head. "I haven't eaten anything today either, Zane. And you didn't see me."
"Forget about my head, Tally. I'm not any worse or any better. It's Shay's arms I'm worried about."
He angled his board closer and lowered his voice.
They're going to be keeping an eye on her, too, now. If your Dr. Remy gets a good look at what she's been doing to herself, all hell will break loose.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
Tally visualized the row of scars along Shay's arms. From a distance, she'd thought they were tattoos, but from close up, anyone would know what they were.
If Dr. Anders saw them,
Tally doubted very much that he would have a smile appropriate to the occasion. Alarms would go off all over the city, and the warden's interest in everyone who'd been involved in the stadium disaster would go way off the scale. Tally reached out and brought them to a stop, lowering her voice to just above a whisper.
We don't have much time, then. He could decide to talk to Shay any day now.
Zane took a deep breath. You'll have to talk to Shay first. Tell her to lay off the cutting.
Oh, fun. What if she doesn't want to?
Tell her we're about to leave. Tell her we'll get her the real cure.
Leave? How?
We just go. Tonight, if we can. I'll pack everything we need. You get the other crims ready.
What about these?
She was too exhausted to raise her swaddled wrist, but he took her meaning.
We'll get them off. Tonight. There's a trick I've been saving.
What trick, Zane?
I can't tell you yet. It'll work, though. It's just a little risky.
Tally frowned. She and Zane had tried every tool they could think of, and nothing had so much as scratched the cuffs.
What is it?
I'll show you tonight, he said, his jaw tight.
Tally swallowed. Must be more than a little risky. Zane stared at her, his face pale and half-starved, his eyes dull through the goggles.
Give the girl a hand, he chuckled. Might need one.
Tally had to turn her eyes away from his smile.
Crusher. The shop shed wasn't far from the hospital, on the downstream end of New Prettytown, where the two arms of the river rejoined each other. This late at night, the lathes, imaging tables, and injection molds sat unused, the place almost empty. The only light came from the other end of the shed, where a middle pretty was blowing molten glass into shape.
It's freezing in here, Tally said. She could see the words coiling from her mouth in the soft red glow of work lights.
The rain had finally stopped while they were getting the crims ready to run, but the air was still damp and chill. Even inside the shed, Tally, Fausto, and Zane were huddled in their winter coats.
They've usually got smelting furnaces going, Zane said, and some of these machines put out a ton of heat.
He pointed at the two sides of the shed that were open to the night.
But the ventilation means no smart walls, see?
I see.
Tally pulled her coat tighter around her, reaching into one pocket to turn up its heater. Fausto pointed at a machine that looked like a huge press.
Hey, I remember playing with one of those back in ugly school, for industrial design class, Fausto said. We made these lunch trays with runners on the bottom, for sliding on the snow.
That's why I brought you along, Zane said, leading Tally and Fausto across the concrete floor.
The bottom part of the machine was a metal table, which seemed to be etched with a million tiny dots. Parallel with the table was suspended an identical expanse of metal.
What? You want to use a crusher?
Fausto raised his eyebrows. Zane still hadn't told them what he was up to, but Tally didn't like the look of the massive machine.
Or its name, for that matter.
Zane put down the champagne bucket he brought, sloshing ice water onto the floor. He pulled a memory card from one pocket and shoved it into the crusher's reader slot. The machine booted up, lights winking around the edge and the floor rumbling powerfully under Tally's feet. A ripple seemed to pass through the table, a wave traveling across the surface, as if the metal had suddenly become liquid and alive. When the movement subsided, Tally took a closer look at the crusher's surface. The tiny, etched-looking dots were in fact the tips of thin rods,
which could be raised up and down to make shapes. She ran her fingers across the table, but the rods were so thin and perfectly aligned, it felt like smooth metal. What's it for?
Stamping out stuff, Zane said.
He pushed a button, and the table sprang to life again, a tiny, symmetrical collection of mountains rising up in its center. Tally noticed that identically shaped cavities had appeared in the upper surface of the crusher.
Hey, that's my lunch tray, Fausta said. Of course, you thought I forgot?
Those things were awesome for sledding, Zane said happily. He pulled a sheet of metal from under the machine and carefully aligned its edges to the tables.
Yeah, I always wondered why they never mass-produce them, Fausto said. Too bubbly making, Zane said, but I bet some ugly reinvents them every few years. Heads up, I'm going to shoot it.
The other two each took a healthy step back. Zane grasped two handles at the edge of the table, squeezing both at the same moment. The machine made a rumbling noise for a fraction of a second, then leaped suddenly into motion, the top half slamming down onto the lower with an ear-splitting clang. The sound echoed through the shed, and Tally's ears were still ringing as the crusher's jaws slowly parted to reveal the sheet of metal.
Sweet, isn't it? Zane said.
He picked up the sheet, whose contours had been reshaped by the impact. It looked like a lunch tray now, with sections to divide a meal into salad, main, and dessert. Turning it over in his hands, Zane ran a finger down the grooves that marked the backside of the tray.
On good, powdery snow, you could go 1,000 clicks an hour on these babies.
Fausto's face had turned pale.
It won't work, Zane.
Why not? Too many safeties. Even if you could get one of us to...
Are you kidding, Zane? Tally cried. You are not sticking your hand in there. That thing'll take it off.
Zane just smiled.
No, it won't. Like Fausto said, too many safeties.
He pulled the memory card out of the crusher's reader slot and stuck another in. The table rippled again, leaving a set of sharp ridges at its edge, like a row of teeth. He placed his left wrist alongside the metal jaws.
It's hard to tell with the glove on, but see where it'll snap the cuff?
But what if it misses, Zane? Tally said. She had to fight to keep her voice down. Their cuffs were bound as usual, but she didn't want the middle pretty at the other end of the shed to hear them.
It doesn't miss. You can stamp out parts for a stopwatch with these things.
It won't work at all, Fausto proclaimed. He stuck his own hand under the crusher. Shoot it.
I know, Zane said, grasping the handles and squeezing.
What? Tally cried in horror, but the machine didn't move.
A row of yellow lights flashed around its edge, and a tiny industrial voice said, Clear, please.
It detects humans, Fausto said. Body heat.
Tally swallowed, her heart pounding in her chest as Fausto took his hand out from under the crusher.
Don't do that.
And even if you trick it, what's the point? Fausto continued. It'll only crush the cuff, which will squish your hand.
Not at 50 meters per second. Look here.
Zane leaned over the table, running one finger along the formation of teeth he had programmed.
That edge will cut it, or at least smack it hard enough to kill whatever's inside. Our cuffs will just be hunks of dead metal after this thing hits them.
Fausto leaned in to look closer, and Tally turned away from the sight of them with their heads between the metal jaws.
Dead metal.
She stared at the glass blower at the other end of the shed. Unaware of their insane conversation, the woman was calmly holding a chunk of glass inside a small, radiant furnace, turning it slowly over the flame. Tally walked toward the woman until she was out of earshot of Zane and Fausto, then unwrapped her cuff. Ping Shea.
Not available. Message?
Tally scowled, but said,
Yes.
Listen, Shay, I know this is my 18th message today, but you've got to answer. I'm sorry we were spying on you, but... Tally didn't know what to add,
assuming that the wardens, maybe even the specials, might be listening. She could hardly explain that they were escaping tonight. "But we're worried about you. Get back to me as soon as you can. We need to talk. Face to face." Tally signed off and rewrapped the scarf around her wrist. Shay, Ho, and Tox, the Cutters, had pulled a big disappearing act, refusing to answer any pings. Probably Shay was sulking about having her secret ceremony spied on. But hopefully one of the Crims would find them and tell them about tonight's escape. Tally and Zane had spent the afternoon getting everyone ready. The Crims were packed up and positioned around the island, ready to start moving once the signal came from the shop shed that Tally and Zane were free. The woman blowing glass had finished heating it up. She pulled the glowing glass from the furnace and began to blow into it through a long tube, making the molten material bubble up into sinuous shapes. Tally reluctantly turned away from the sight and returned to the crusher. "But what about the safeties?" Fausta was arguing. "I can get rid of my body heat."
"How?"
Zane kicked the champagne bucket. 30 seconds in ice water, and my hand will be as cold as a chunk of metal." "Yeah, but your hand is not a chunk of metal," Tally cried. "And neither is mine. That's the problem."
"Look, Tally, I'm not asking you to go first."
She shook her head. "I'm not going at all, Zane. Neither are you."
"She's right."
Fausta was staring at the metal teeth rising up from the table, comparing them with their twins jutting down from the top half. "High marks for good design, but sticking your hand in there is crazy. If you've miscalculated by 1 centimeter, the crusher will hit bone. They told us about that in shop class. The shock wave will travel all the way up your arm, shattering everything along the way. Hey, if it misses, they'll put me back together. And it won't miss. I even made a different cast for your hand, Tally," Zane said, waving another memory card. "Since your cuff's smaller." "If this goes wrong, they'll never fix you," she said quietly. "Not even the city hospital can rebuild a flattened hand."
"Not flattened," Fausto said.
"Your bones will be liquefacted, Zane. That means the shock will melt them." "Listen, Tally," Zane said, reaching down to fish the bottle out of the champagne bucket. "I didn't want to do this either. But I had an attack this morning, remember?" He popped the cork.
"You had a what?" Fausto said.
Tally shook her head. "We have to find some other way."
"There's no time," Zane said, taking a swig from the bottle. "So, Fausto, will you help?"
"Help?" Tally asked. Fausto nodded slowly. "It takes 2 hands to shoot the crusher, another safety feature, so you can't leave one in there by accident. He needs one of us to pull the triggers." Fausto crossed his arms.
"Forget it."
"I'm not helping you either," Tally said.
"Tally," Zane sighed, "if we don't leave the city tonight, I might as well stick my head in there. These headaches have been coming every 3 days or so, and now they're getting worse. We have to leave."
Fausto frowned.
"What are you talking about?"
Zane turned to him.
"Something's wrong with me, Fausto. That's why we have to go tonight. We think the new Smokies can help me."
"Why would you need them? What's wrong with you?"
"What's wrong with me is I'm cured."
"Come again?"
Zane took a deep breath. "You see, we took these pills."
Tally groaned and turned away, realizing that another line was being crossed. First Shay, and now Fausto. Tally wondered how long it would be before all the Crims knew about the cure, which would only make it more urgent for her and Zane to escape the city, no matter what they had to risk. Tally watched the glassblower with growing unhappiness. She could see Fausto's disbelief fading as Zane explained what had happened to the two of them over the last month. The pills, the growing bubbliness of the cure, and Zane's crippling headaches.
"So Shay was right about you guys," he said. "That's why you're so different now."
Shay had been the only one to call Tally on it, But all the other Krims must have seen the changes and wondered what had happened. They all wanted the strange new bubbliness that Tali and Zane had. Now that Fausto knew the cure existed, that it was as simple as swallowing a pill, maybe risking a couple of hands in the crusher wouldn't seem so crazy to him. Tali sighed. Maybe it wasn't crazy. That very morning, she had delayed taking Zane to the hospital, waiting outside in the rain for what might have been precious minutes, risking his life, not just his hand. She swallowed. What was the word Fausto had used? Liquefacted? The glass object was growing in the woman's grasp, bubbling into overlapping spheres that looked supremely delicate, impossible to repair if shattered. The woman held the glowing shape carefully. Some things couldn't be put back together if you broke them. Tali thought about David's father, Az. When Dr. Cable had tried to erase Az's memories, the process had killed him. The mind was even more fragile than the human hand, and none of them had a clue what was going on inside Zane's head. She looked down at her own left glove, flexing the finger slowly. Was she brave enough to put it in the crusher's metal jaws? Maybe. Are you sure we can find the new Smokies out there? Fausto was saying to Zane. I thought no one had seen them for a while. The uglies we met this morning said there were signs they'd come back. And they can cure you? Tali heard it then in Fausto's voice. He was justifying it to himself aloud, slowly but surely, and would eventually agree to shoot the crusher. It even made perfect sense, in a horrible way. There was a cure for Zane's condition somewhere out in the wild, and if they didn't get him to it, he was as good as dead anyway. What was risking a hand? Tali turned and said, I'll do it. I'll pull the triggers. They looked at her in shocked silence for a moment. Then Zane smiled. Good. I'd rather it was you. She swallowed. Why? Because I trust you. Don't want to be shaking. Tali took a deep breath, fighting to keep tears from her eyes. Thanks, I guess. There was a moment of uncomfortable silence. Are you sure, Tali? Fausto finally said. I could do it. No, it should be me. Well, no sense waiting around. Zane dropped his winter coat to the floor. He unwrapped his scarf from his wrist and pulled off the glove that had covered his cuff. His bare left hand looked small and fragile next to the crusher's dark mass. Zane made a fist and thrust it into the ice bucket, wincing as the freezing water began to leach his body heat away. Get ready, Tali. She glanced at their backpacks on the floor, felt to make sure she was wearing her belly sensor, checked the hoverboards at the edge of the shed one more time. The wires under the boards were yanked apart, disconnected from the city grid. They were ready to go. Tali looked at her cuff. Once Zane's was shattered, the tracking signal would be interrupted. They'd have to do hers right away and get moving. They would have a long run just to reach the edge of the city. 2 dozen Krims waited all over the island, ready to scatter into the wild and draw pursuit in every direction. Each carried a Roman candle with a special mix of colors, purple and green, to spread the signal once Zane and Tali were free. Free. Tali looked down at the crusher's controls and swallowed. The 2 handles were cast in cheery, bright yellow plastic and shaped like thumb game joysticks, each with a fat trigger. When she took hold of them, the power of the idling machine shuddered in her hands, like the rumble of a suborbital plane passing overhead. She tried to imagine herself pulling the triggers, and couldn't. Tali was out of arguments, though, and the time for discussion was past. After 30 long seconds in the ice water, Zane pulled his hand out. Close your eyes in case the metal shatters. The cold will make it brittle, Zane said in a normal voice. It didn't matter what the cuff heard now, Tali realized. By the time anyone figured out what they were talking about, they'd be flying at top speed toward the rusty ruins. Zane placed his wrist on the edge of the table, closing his eyes tightly. Okay, do it. Tally took a deep breath, her hands trembling on the controls. She closed her eyes and thought, okay, do it now. But her fingers didn't obey. Her mind started to spin, thinking of everything that could go wrong. She imagined flying Zane to the hospital again, his left arm a mass of jelly. She imagined specials bursting in at that moment and stopping them, having figured out what they were up to. She wondered if Zane had made all the right measurements, and if he'd remembered that the cuff would have shrunk a bit from the ice water. Tally paused at that thought, thinking maybe she should ask him. She opened her eyes. The wet cuff glimmered like a piece of gold in the crusher's yellow work lights. Tally, do it. Cold would make the metal contract, but heat. Tally glanced at the glassblower on the other side of the shed, blissfully unaware of the violent, horrible thing that was about to happen. Tally, Fausta said softly. Heat would make the cuff expand. The woman held the red-hot glass in her hands, turning it over to inspect it from every side. How was she holding molten glass? Tally, Fausto said, if you want, I'll do... Hang on, she said, taking her hands from the crusher's controls. What? Zane cried. Stay here. She pulled the memory card from the crusher's slot, ignoring the sounds of protest behind her, and ran past hulking lathes and furnaces to the other side of the shed. At her approach, the woman looked up placidly, smiling with middle pretty calm. Hello, dear. Hi, that's beautiful, Tally said. The pleasant smile grew warmer. Thank you. Tally could see the woman's hands now, how they shimmered silver in the glowing red light. You're wearing gloves, aren't you? The woman laughed. Of course, it's rather hot in that furnace, you know. But you can't feel it? Not through these gloves. I think the material was invented for shuttles coming back through the atmosphere. It can reflect a couple of thousand degrees. Tally nodded. And they're really thin, aren't they? From across the room, I couldn't even tell you had them on. That's right, the woman nodded happily. You can feel the texture of the glass right through them. Wow, Tally smiled prettily. The gloves would fit on under the cuffs, she could see now. Where can I get a pair? The woman nodded at a cupboard. Tally opened it and found dozens of gloves crammed inside, their reflective material glittering like fresh snow. She pulled two out. They're all the same size? Yeah, they stretch to fit, all the way up past the elbows, the woman said. Just make sure you throw them away after one use. They don't work very well the second time. No problem. Tally turned away with the gloves in a tight grip, relief flooding through her as she realized she wouldn't have to pull the triggers, wouldn't have to watch the crusher snap down on Zane's hand. A new and better plan unfolded in her mind like clockwork. She knew exactly where to find a powerful furnace, one they could take right to the edge of the city. Wait a second, Tally, the woman said, a troubled note entering her voice. Tally froze, realizing that the woman had recognized her. Of course, everyone who watched the feeds knew Tally Youngblood's face now. She racked her brain for an innocent reason for needing the gloves, but everything she thought of sounded totally bogus. Yeah? You've got two left gloves there, the woman laughed. Not very useful, whatever trick you're planning. Tally smiled, letting a slow chuckle escape her lips. That's what you think. But she turned back to the cupboard and fished out two right gloves. It wouldn't hurt to protect both hands. Thanks for all your help, she said. No problem. The woman smiled beautifully, turning away, staring again into the curves of her piece of glass. Just be careful. Don't worry, Tally said. I always am. Hijacking. Are you kidding? How do we requisition one in the middle of the night? Fausto asked. We can't. We'll have to hijack it. Tally put a backpack over her shoulder and snapped for her board to follow. In fact,
We should get a few. The more of us who go that way, the better.
Hijack? Zane said, checking the rewrapped scarf around his forearm. You mean steal them?
No, we'll ask nicely, she grinned. Don't forget, Zane, we're the Crims. We're famous. Follow me.
Outside the shop shed, she jumped on board and headed up toward the center of the island, where the tops of the party spires were always surrounded by parasails, hot air balloons, and fireworks. The other two scrambled to follow. You pass the word to the rest of the Crims, she shouted to Fausto. Tell them about the change in plans.
He glanced at Zane for approval, then nodded, relieved that the crusher concept had been replaced by something less violent.
How many of us do you want to go up with?
9 or 10, she said. Anyone who's not afraid of heights. The rest can go by hoverboard, as planned. We'll be ready in 20 minutes. Meet us in the center of town.
I'll be there, Fausto said, and angled away into the night sky.
Tali turned to Zane.
You okay?
He nodded, slowly flexing the fingers of his gloved hand.
I'll be fine. It's just taking me a second to switch gears.
She brought her board closer to Zane's, taking his bare hand.
It was brave, what you wanted to do.
He shook his head. I guess it was stupid.
Yeah, maybe, but if we hadn't gone to the shop, I wouldn't have thought of this.
He smiled. I'm pretty glad you did, to tell you the truth.
His hand flexed nervously again. Then he pointed ahead of them.
There's a couple.
She followed his gaze to the center of the island, where a pair of hot air balloons floated like big bald heads above a party spire, the tethers that kept them in place catching the trembling light of safety fireworks.
Perfect, she said.
One problem, Zane said. How do we get that high on hoverboards?
She thought for a moment.
Very carefully.
They climbed higher than she ever had, rising slowly alongside the party spire, close enough to reach out and touch its concrete wall. The metal inside the building provided barely enough push for the board's lifters, and Tali felt a nervous making tremble under her feet, standing at the edge of the highest diving board as a littlie.